Good afternoon. The time is 2 o'clock. Welcome to Vox Pop for this Monday, April 7th. I'm Ray Graff. Support comes from Dr. Lucy Chapik, female plastic surgeon specializing in facial rejuvenation surgery, including face and neck lift, blepharoplasty, and brow lift, located in Latham, New York. A surgeon's hands, a woman's touch. Joining us for Medical Monday today is Dr. Andy Nawab of Cardiology Associates of Schenectady. She specializes in heart disease prevention and women's heart health. She is also board certified in obesity medicine. The number to call here is 800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551, or you can email your question to voxpop@wamc.org. We will meet Dr. Nawab and take your cardiac calls right after the news. Hello again. Welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Ray Graff. In the studio this afternoon for Medical Monday is Dr. Andy Nawab. Dr. Nawab is a cardiology internist at Cardiology Associates of Schenectady, part of St. Peter's Health Partners Medical Associates. She specializes in heart disease prevention and women's heart health. Dr. Nawab is the director of Ellis Medicine's outpatient congestive heart failure and women's heart disease programs. In 2014, she was the recipient of the American Heart Association's Donald LeDuc Heart Hero Award. Dr. Nawab is also board certified in obesity medicine. If you have a question, give us a call. 800-348-2551, 800-348-2551, or you can email us at voxpop@wamc.org. Dr. Andy Nawab, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thank you for inviting me to this show and to be able to speak to your listeners and to, put some light on all the issues that are popping up in our cardiac world right now.
Are there a lot of issues popping up that weren't there 20 years ago?
No, not that many, but, more treatment, more, stuff that we have gotten to know about. As we go along, I mean, these are issues were there before, but we are just becoming more aware of it, doing more studies, more, awareness, basically.
You know, we talked a little about this before the show started. It's amazing how much work somebody in your line of work has to do to stay current with all the advances.
I think you're right. It's just you have to stay current because things are changing so rapidly, not only just in cardiology, but in medicine all over. So many new drugs, so much, biological substances, so many new pharmacological management of obesity, of specific diseases, autoimmune diseases, cancer treatments. So much has come out that you have to stay current if you have to help your patients.
It's Cardiology Today with Dr. Andy Nawab of Cardiology Associates of Schenectady. You know, according to your bio, you're director of Women's Heart Disease Program. And the question I had, why do you need a separate man and woman cardiac program? What's the difference? Heart is a heart, right?
Yeah, there is a huge difference. A woman and a man is just wired differently.
Really? Even yes. In the heart?
Yes, because you see, there are these cardiac specific risk factors that is just very specific to females as compared to males. For example, women being pregnant, it's like having your own sort of stress test very early on in life, and if you have adverse pregnancy outcomes, like having preeclampsia, it's a condition that a woman can develop high blood pressure, derangements of placenta that can cause hormonal imbalance in a female, makes you have early delivery, gestational diabetes, gestational hypertension. These are all risk factors during pregnancy that a female can develop that would put you at increased risk of developing hypertension and diabetes early on in life that will in turn then cause adverse cardiac outcome later on in your life. Same is the case with menopause, for example. Early menopause would lead to a similar situation where you will have insulin resistance. You have, because, you know, estrogens are protective to us. Once the estrogen goes away, and if it goes away early in life, then you'll have more development of high blood pressure. You have more androgens in your bloodstream, and you would have more increased risk of developing hypertension, insulin resistance, diabetes, all that stuff.
Let me ask you a quick question.
Yes.
What do you consider to be early menopause?
So at anything that is in your late 30s, early 40s, you know, there's a big range when it comes to menopause, but 45 to 55 is average. Anytime you have it, an early menopause before the age of 45, you know, 35 to 45, and earlier means, you know, below 40 or a little bit like around there, it's considered early menopause, you know. So
in your estimation, and I know there is controversy about this and has been for decades, in your estimation, should more women take some estrogen in the early stages of menopause?
Yes, very good question. And I think I'm a proponent of taking estrogen, despite all the stuff that in the cardiovascular literature about, you know, that it can, you know, affect women in terms of thromboembolic risk associated with estrogen. But if you have early menopause, the first 10 years of your early menopause, HRT or hormone replacement therapy will definitely help mitigate those risks. You know, I always counsel my patient to stop smoking. If I'm going to put those patients on hormone replacement therapy, try to use a good way of transporting this estrogen, like transdermal way, you know, like putting estrogen patches on the skin instead of doing an oral. Having a minimum dose of hormone along with progesterone is very, very, you know, it's gonna be very beneficial to help that, you know, help with the bones, help with the mitigate the risk of cardiovascular disease, because you're basically putting the hormone back into the system. So you're reducing the insulin resistance and all the other stuff that is coming with it.
You know, there have been so many studies over the last, I don't know, 50 years just this topic.
Yes.
Has the average amount of estrogen been reduced from the old days? In other words,
yeah, there is a minimum dose and there is a maximum dose. So multiple dosages have been studied across the last, you know, 10, 15 years. And more people are saying the lowest effective dose, maybe transdermally, maybe in a micronized fashion, like, you know, more like plant-based, which are very similar to what we like secrete from our ovaries. If you don't have a uterus, then just estrogen. If you have a uterus, then you need a combination of estrogen and progesterone to reduce the risk of breast cancer and stuff like that. But I do tell my younger patients that the smoking, if you are smoking and I am putting you on hormone replacement therapy, that does increase your risk for blood clots and
interesting.
Yes, strokes and all of that. And then other specific cardiac risk factors for females are, for example, certain autoimmune diseases like lupus and rheumatoid arthritis. This is more common in females. And once again, those kind of autoimmune risk factors puts people to have low-grade inflammation in your body, which one once again puts you at increased risk of stroke and heart disease.
So interesting. You say women are much more likely to get lupus or rheumatoid arthritis. Do you mean just post-menopause or throughout life?
Throughout life.
Why?
Nine.
Do you know why?
We don't know why, but we just know that 9 times more risk for lupus than males.
Okay.
And about 3 to 4 times more risk for rheumatoid arthritis for females than males. And it's got to be some sort of like low-grade inflammation that females carry, that our own autoimmune response, whether it's the stress, whether maybe it's the stress. I feel like pregnancy is the first stress test that a female's body has to experience, and sometimes at a very young age, which can cause a lot of hormonal imbalances. I mean, our hormones are different, you know, and I mean, we don't know why that could happen, but it does. And those autoimmune diseases puts people at they create this low grade inflammation in your body that would put you at increased risk for heart attacks and strokes early on in life, you know. And then there is this particular condition that happens in females called polycystic ovarian syndrome. And I mean, males don't have ovaries.
Right.
We have ovaries, yep. You know. And once again, it's the same thing. We really don't know why certain women get that. But basically, your ovaries produces follicles for eggs to be fertilized. And for some reason, for certain females, these polycystic ovaries develop where these ovaries have resistance to insulin. These follicles are there, but they are like sitting on the outside of the ovaries and are just like ineffective, and they're not able to be fertilized. So females get irregular periods, a lot of androgens in their bodies because there is a lot of insulin, but the insulin is not sensitive. They get, you know, obese early on in life. They have issues with infertility. And anything that will reduce estrogen for whatever reasons early on in life, whether it's polycystic, whether it's autoimmune disorders, whether it's all the other risk factors that we talked about, early menopause, all of these things will put females at an increased risk for heart attack and strokes. And basically, you'll become even worse than males for your age if those risk factors are there.
We're joined today by Dr. Andalib Nawab of Cardiology Associates of Schenectady. The number here is 800-348-2551. 800-348-2551. You can email voxpop@wamc.org. We'll take a break in a moment and hit the phones. Well, you know, to people in your line of work, the fact that some women will present heart attack different than men is very old news. Are there different, aside from estrogen and therapies like that in postmenopausal patients, are there any other different modalities that you use just for women who are presenting cardiac issues?
No, I think it's just, it's the same modalities, but it's just that we have to be on guard with females because we have our stress tests, the way to evaluate for heart disease. We have all these other blood works, but the issue is that females have more false positives, you know, in terms of cardiac testings, you know.
Do we know why?
Yeah. I mean, I think that we have breast tissue, which is, you know, masks a lot of EKG abnormalities. So, for example, you put somebody put them on a stress test and you have, a bigger breast or denser breasts, you know, the EKG tracings will be like as if somebody is having some sort of a heart issue, it may not be. Same is the case with nuclear stress tests. We have a lot of these diaphragm, because, you know, our breasts are sitting on the diaphragm, a lot of diaphragmatic attenuation on the nuclear stress test, which causes false positivity. So I am very careful when, and then on top of it, the women slightly presents, or I wouldn't say present differently, I mean, because chest pain is chest pain, but females presents with a lot of other sort of symptoms like fatigue, vague symptoms like a hormonal symptoms like fatigue, shortness of breath, palpitations. Jaw pain is very common in females. Females present a lot more with shoulder blade. And, you know, we are always working, cooking, cleaning. So, you know, people think that it's just like musculoskeletal discomfort. So, It's just the females just present, and there was like a big study that came out that said that, yes, chest pain is chest pain, that females and males both present similarly, but the accompanied features of fatigue, shortness of breath, just feeling tired, shoulder blade pain, jaw pain, palpitations, this is more common in females than males. And once again, I don't want to harp on this issue, but once again, it's the same thing, is that the hormonally, we are going through all those symptoms right along. Like, I mean, women are having irregular periods or difficult periods or bad menopausal symptoms, vasomotor symptoms, which are we call as vasomotor because this is like, you know, like people with a little bit palpitation, rapid heartbeat, feeling that they are tired, exhausted, too much bleeding, too less of a bleeding, whatever the case is. And that, along with having to deal with the cardiac symptoms at the same time, that how to tease out that is it true cardiac or is it the hormonal? And then on top of it, we have all these false positive testing that happens with females. So that's why it is so important, and that's why we are different.
You know, it sounds like you have your work cut out for you.
Yeah.
All right, let's take a quick break here. Dr. Andy Nawab joins us today. We'll get to your calls in a moment. 800-348-2551 is the number. Email is voxpop@wamc.org. We'll check the email bag in a moment. I mean you. That's Pete Levin and the group here on Vox Pop. 800-348-2551. It's a Medical Monday, Cardiology Today with Dr. Andy Nawab of Cardiology Associates of Schenectady. Let's grab a couple of emails here at voxpop@wamc.org. Then we'll hit the phones. All right. This is from Janet. Subject heading is ApoB. Do you know what that is? Please, maybe I didn't say it right. ApoB. Please explain this lipid test is the question.
Oh, yes. Okay. Is this Janet, you said?
Janet, yes.
Hi, Janet. You go to your doctors and you talk about, you know, we all get checked for periodically for our cholesterol profiles, which include four numbers, the total cholesterol, HDL, which is the good cholesterol, LDL, which is the bad cholesterol, and then triglycerides. By the way, I will through your listeners, will say that all of you should ask your doctors their numbers. Should not just, you know, do your cholesterol and not talk about it. Always say, doctor, what is the, where should I be and what is my number? It is very important. You know, I actually encourage patients to talk to me and ask me these questions because that's how we then start the discussion regarding, you know, how, what good is good and what bad is bad, you know? But what Janet asked is a specific kind of blood test. I mean, so I usually offer those blood works to patients who I am, say, for example, we just talked about a lot of these risk factors. Say, for example, somebody has pretty bad early on hypertension, bad diabetes, positive family history. Like, you know, your father dropped dead at age 40, your mom had heart attack or bad heart disease way before, you know, 55, before, during your, you know, even when she had not hit menopause. The early family history of coronary artery disease, because, you know, you can improve your regular risk factors like blood pressure, diabetes, through diet and exercise, but you can't like really run away from your genes.
Right.
Your genetics are your genetics. So ApoB and lipoprotein A, A and B are the three tests that I offer, and actually sometimes homocysteine levels. These are the sum of the extra tests that I sometimes will do for females and males both who have these sort of early risk factors and positive family history of coronary artery disease, early, premature family history of coronary artery disease, because these hormone levels will be elevated. So I have patients who say, well, I am 34 or 35. My LDL or bad cholesterol is about 130, 140. Why should I take what is my risk? My father just dropped dead at age 40. What is my risk of developing heart disease or heart attack or stroke? By doing these extra hormonal levels, by doing certain tests, we can at least give you a calculated risk as to what is your risk and how aggressive you need to be, whether you need to be like through diet or exercise or through medications. I'm not a huge pill pusher. I want patients to also do their work before I will say, like, let's do this. But But these extra hormone tests are good to do in those patients. Not everybody.
We're joined today by Dr. Andy Nawab of Cardiology Associates of Schenectady. Linda writes, what effect does a calcium channel blocker like amlodipine have on someone recently diagnosed with left branch bundle block who also has NAFL and also recently been treated for hypertension with the addition of lisinopril along with amlodipine?
I think Linda is asking the different medical treatments for treatment of or different drug classes for treatment of hypertension.
Specifically with regard to the calcium channel blocker.
Yeah. And especially in someone who has a left bundle branch block. Sometimes you can have a left bundle branch block.
It's
just
what is
Okay. So it's a conduction system issue. It's an electrical system issue.
Okay.
So we all have electrical system. Whenever I talk to patients, I tell them I divide the heart by three or four categories so that the patient can understand as to what they are suffering from. One is your electrical system. One is your blood vessels, the arteries that are in your body, in your heart, which, you know, basically the plaque in the coronary artery will cause you a heart attack. Electrical system does not do that. Electrical system is a different thing. It just helps to basically depolarize your heart and help you pump, you know, because your electricity is like switching on and off, like, you know, mechanism. And then the third component is your heart muscle. And then the fourth component are the valves, the gatekeepers that are inside the heart that are helping open and close like doors, you know. So there is a door, there is a room, there is your lights up here in the studio, you know. So there's like four different aspects to the heart. So left bundle branch block is a kind of condition where you have two conduction systems, one going on to the right side, one going on to the left side. Both electrical systems have to be present and have to be there to be able to contract the lower portions of the ventricles of the heart. Left bundle branch block is an electrical condition where there is an interruption of the electrical system on the left side of the heart. When does this happen? It can just be present there on the EKG. We randomly find out. Patient comes to the office. We do an EKG on here. We have a left bundle branch block. Most of the time, the left bundle branch block is associated with dilated cardiomyopathy, means that your heart muscle is just weak. That's why that left side of the electrical system is not working. Or you may have a blockage in your blood vessel, and that's why that electrical system on the left side is not working. So you basically do tests, make sure you do an echo, an ultrasound of your heart to make sure your heart is squeezing good. You do maybe a stress test or something, or maybe even a catheterization to make sure that you do not have blockages of your blood vessel. Say you have nothing, you just have a left bundle branch block. I try to avoid amlodipine, which is a calcium channel blocker. It's a vasodilator, means it dilates the blood vessels on the peripheral system on the rest of your body, and that's how it lowers blood pressure. Left bundle branch people, sometimes if they're associated with these cardiomyopathy or reduction of their heart muscle, if you take a calcium channel blocker, you're going to have a lot of swelling of your legs. It would be at increased risk for heart failure. So for those patients, I do prescribe more of like lisinopril and diuretic therapy instead of an amlodipine. Amlodipine, I also avoid in women or males. Somebody who has a left ventricular outflow tract problem, like hypertrophic cardiomyopathy. These are genetic conditions where heart muscle has grown into the left side of the ventricle and is causing the interruption on the electrical system of the left side. Those are, once again, those patients that I like not to use those calcium channel blockers because of increased risk of heart failure.
We're joined today by Dr. Andy Nawab of Cardiology Associates of Schenectady. Let's go to the phones. 800-348-2551 is the number. We'll begin in Montgomery, New York. June, it's your turn. Go ahead.
Hi, it's June. And
hi,
thank
June.
You for taking my
hi,
call.
June.
I went to get some cholesterol done. I'm 73. My cholesterol was 206. I also decided, because my husband had some problems with statins, to get a calcium test. and my descending aorta has plaque in it, and my calcium score was 25.5. My question is, should I go on a statin? Should I try to get my cholesterol down? There's heart disease in my family, but not until people are in their 90s. And stroke. So I really don't want to go on a statin. I'm trying really hard to change my diet and exercise more. I weigh about 103 pounds and have low blood pressure. So I'd love to hear what you would have to say about that. Thank you.
Sure. Thank you for this question. So so there's two different issues. There is a coronary calcium score, which is mildly positive. 25 of coronary calcium score is there. It's mild. I usually get worried when the calcium score is, you know, closer to like 400, for example, you know, so 25 is not that much, frankly speaking. Now, the second issue is the plaque in the aorta. I would say that a baby aspirin would be a good thing to treat with for the plaques in the aorta, because, you know, that would just actually thin your blood and will reduce the risk of, because the plaques in the aorta basically can throw little many clots into your head. So you may not have a heart attack, but you may be at increased risk of like mini TIAs or strokes, you know. So a baby aspirin would be a good idea. I would say that, first of all, I would try diet and exercise. First, see how much can you help with diet and exercise. And if that doesn't work, and your LDLs, your bad cholesterol, needs to be closer to 70. So I know your total cholesterol is 206, which is not bad. It should be below 200. But your LDL component of the cholesterol, I don't know what it is, but it should be closer towards 70, 70. If you can achieve diet. Yes.
Mine is 135.
135. So to be honest, if you can, I think with diet and exercise, you could potentially get it closer to 100, but not closer to 70. So first try diet and exercise. See how much work can you do. And if you couldn't get it down, like I would give it good 6 months, give it a good try. And if you couldn't get it below 100 and it's stuck between 100 to 130, then maybe very, very small dose, like a baby dose, would not hurt you.
June, thanks a lot for the call. The number here is 800-348-2551. Dr. Andy Nawab joins us. Interesting to hear you say the words baby aspirin.
Yes.
Seems to be people in your line of work are drifting away from that. I know I take one every day.
Yes.
But why was there
What is the controversy?
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. No. So basically, there is a lot of studies that have come out about the efficacy of different dosages of aspirin, like which aspirin would be the good aspirin, you know, full dose of, we have moved so far away from a full dose of aspirin, between moderate size, which was 162, full dose is 325, then medium was 162, and then 81 milligrams is what we call as baby aspirin,
yeah.
You know. So basically, we found out that too much aspirin is also not of a good thing, because too much, yes. And we found out through studies that actually more patients had GI bleeding than what we were preventing heart attack and stroke. So it's always like risk and benefit,
yeah.
You know what I mean? So the risk of GI bleeding was more than prevention for the risk of getting a heart attack and a stroke. So you have to select your patient population very, very. So I actually don't ask people randomly to go on aspirin, you know what I mean? So unless and until, of course, you have, you know, had a prior history of stroke, you have history of coronary artery disease. Nowadays, we are even moving away from, even after you develop a coronary artery disease, for example, you get a stent. Initially, you are on aspirin plus Plavix is another medication that you take for blood thinners.
Yeah.
But now we are again moving away from having to take two blood thinners, same issue, is that the risk of GI bleeding. We either go for aspirin or Plavix. We are moving away from dual antiplatelet therapy. Say, for example, another case scenario will be somebody who has AFib. A person comes in who has irregular heartbeat called atrial fibrillation.
That's an electrical problem.
That's an electrical problem. And now this electrical problem produce or cause people to have 5 to 6 times increased risk of stroke. And the blood thinner that is used for atrial fibrillation is other kind of blood thinner. It's not aspirin or clopidogrel. It's more like Eliquis or Xarelto, the DOACs that we give patients. So now suddenly the same patient who has AFib now develops heart attack. And now you have to take 3 blood thinners, aspirin, Plavix, and Eliquis. And nowadays the studies have come out that we actually can try to get rid of the aspirin within 4 to 6 weeks after the stent very safely, keep patients on Plavix and Eliquis, and then maybe even stop the Plavix in about a year and then just purely keep them on Eliquis. So basically more and more studies to reduce the risk of bleeding. Bleeding is a real risk. Right. You know, we don't want to like fall and hit our head and have and die of a head bleed while we are protecting from heart and strokes.
Yeah, that would be bad.
Or die of hemorrhagic shock because we bled too much from a stomach ulcer. So that you have to be careful about.
Dr. Andy Nawab joins us today. Let's grab one more call before the next break. 800-348-2551 is our number here on Vox Pop. Val is in Pittsfield. Hello, Val.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
You bet.
Similar to the last caller, I had a CT scan recently. I'm 69 for a GI issue. And, you know, it showed that I have plaque in my aorta. Is that something I'm on a statin?
No.
Is that something I have to worry about or should see a cardiologist?
Well, did it also say that you have calcifications in your coronary arteries or just said calcification in your aorta?
It was just the aorta was mentioned.
And you never had any, any source of cardiac testing at your age? You never had like a stress test or?
No.
I usually do get like, you know, these are all just trying to be proactive so that you don't, I don't think we need to be super concerned for you at the moment. You're on a statin, you can, but I do think that for your age, you're 69, I would get at least a baseline a cardiac evaluation, you know what I mean? And that means a stress test and an echocardiogram. I'm very proactive that all of us females, you know, when we have these risk factors, hypertension, high cholesterol, plaques, anywhere, that we should at least get a baseline test in case, you know, we pick up something that we will not pick up otherwise.
All right, Val, we got to leave it there. We have to take a break. We are joined today by Dr. Andy Nawab of Cardiology Associates of Albany, of Schenectady, I should say. 800-348-2551 is the number. We'll be back. Medical Monday, Ray Graff with you at 800-348-2551. Dr. Andy Nawab joins us today, and a couple of emails, and then we'll get back to the phones, Doc. This is from Mary, and the subject heading, coronary calcium score. So that seems to be a recurring theme today. 62-year-old female with rheumatoid arthritis. I had a CT coronary calcium test done for a baseline. Overall score was 0 and 0 for all the arteries. Does this mean I have no plaque in my arteries and no atherosclerosis? And that's from Mary.
So your 10-year risk for the next 10 years risk is what it says. That's coronary calcium scores is a pretty good guideline that, you know, your risk of developing heart disease in the next 10 years is not significant, you know. However, you have rheumatoid arthritis, which puts you at increased risk for low-grade inflammation in your bodies. And by having a 0 calcium score doesn't mean that it's completely 0. Like, you just don't have an obstructive plaque, a plaque that is going to get stuck in a blood vessel and give you a heart attack, but you still have plaques circulating in your bloodstreams that are just not showing up onto the coronary calcium score. Plus, the coronary calcium scores will not detect very, very tiny plaques, like less than 5 millimeters of tiny plaques. So it doesn't mean that you have nothing, but still, it's a pretty good guideline that your risk of developing a bad event is low. However, you have rheumatoid arthritis, low grade of inflammation in your body, so you should do all the other things. Like, you should not let your cholesterol run extremely high. Say, for example, your bad cholesterol is like, I don't know, 170s, 180, a very high cholesterol, and you have rheumatoid arthritis, but your coronary calcium score is zero. I still would, talk about putting you on a small dose of statin, or find other ways of reducing your risk factors for to keeping your cholesterol levels down.
What's your favorite statin to?
I don't have a favorite statin. I just think that atorvastatin or rosuvastatin, these are high intensity statins. They can bring cholesterol levels down to a big number down. But there are certain, I don't think that one medicine fits all for everybody. I actually talk to patients. I ask them, for example, for females, they complain of a lot of aches and pains from their bones and things like that. So I would sometimes go to pravastatin, which is lipophilic and it's not very strong, but at the same time has reduced side effects. Rosuvastatin is a good one, but again, may not even have to be used daily. You could actually, rosuvastatin is a long acting statin. So I sometimes use it in patients like one every other day in a low dose form. Mm-hmm. So I don't even though the literature says, everybody who has heart disease should be on a high-dose statin, which is true. Somebody who has a stroke should be on high dose. But people, when we are using it for preventative cases, I use case by case, because you want to use the most effective dose, but not a dose where it's going to hurt your body or give you too many side effects that...
Cramping and things like that.
Yeah, and then patients come in and they're not even... And if you don't going to convince them to take it, then they're not going to take it. And I have patients who take the prescriptions, and then you take their blood work and it's still bad. And they will not own up to it that they're not taking it. So
what do you do? Interrogate them?
No, I totally think that the patient and doctor relationship should be of a professional one, but also should develop this trust, where you should be able not only convince yourself and also convince your patient and talk like in a two-way dialogue to that, what do they think and what do you think, and then come up with a good dose instead of me just sitting and saying, this is what it is, this is what you got to take,
But some patients want that.
Some patients want that, and you kind of gauge those kind of patients. But I do think that my female population likes a discussion.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And patients are getting more intelligent. They want a discussion. They just want a pill to just write it and give it to you. They would like more discussion. And it's very, I welcome that.
All right. In my house with four daughters, they do like discussion.
Yeah, yes.
Let me tell you something. All right. Lucy writes, and I have PMR. Could that have been related to stress of childbirth? I gave birth to two children. And that's from Lucy.
So polymyalgia rheumatica, this is PMR. That's a condition that, once again, is more common in females than males. Right now, this particular condition hasn't been studied, that this particular condition will cause, could be related to, bad adverse pregnancy outcomes, or this particular condition could have an increased risk of stroke or heart attack. However, it's under, we are studying all these autoimmune diseases, but PMR at the moment is not one of those conditions that is listed.
All right, let's go back to our phone lines with Dr. Andy Nawab of Cardiology Associates of Schenectady. We will go to Montague, Massachusetts, and check in with Roy. Roy, go ahead.
Hey, hold on.
That's not a good start, Roy.
Am I still there?
Yes.
Okay, sir. Hi, Ray. Hi, Doc.
Hi.
So I heard you mention left side bundle block, and they found that in me coincidentally, and they said, don't worry about it. You're fine. And so do I need to see a cardiologist?
Well, so they didn't do any tests and just said, you're fine?
Right. They saw the bundle block. They said, that's not a big deal. Leave it.
No, I wouldn't go by that approach. Whenever I see somebody coincidentally having a left bundle branch block, which was not there before, I definitely would encourage you to get a cardiologist. I would do an ultrasound of your heart, an echocardiogram, make sure your heart function is normal, because sometimes, as I said, people can have low functions of the heart for whatever reason, autoimmune or idiopathic. Idiopathic means we don't know a reason, but you could be having a condition called dilated cardiomyopathy. And then I also would definitely do like a nuclear stress test, because there is a percentage of patients with left bundle branch block that are associated with coronary artery disease. So I would do an echo and a nuclear stress test before saying, yes, your left bundle is nothing to worry.
Interesting. I also have PMR, which is interesting.
Yes. So I would definitely, I would at least go for the preliminary test before saying, I actually had a similar patient that just was seen in the hospital for the first time. And this patient ended up in the heart failure. And I looked at the EKG, and the EKG was for 10 years a left bundle. Nobody did any test on him. Then he ended up with suddenly 10 years later, heart failure, like fluid buildup in his lungs, you know. And then, of course, all the tests happened, like echo, nuclear, cardiac cath, all the test results. We didn't really find any coronary artery disease, but he actually had specifically a cardiomyopathy or dilated heart specific to left bundle branch block, and actually ended up having a defibrillator and all of that stuff. So I do think that it's important that you get checked with a cardiologist.
All right, Roy, thank you very much for the call. And now we head to Ballston Spa, New York. Mary, you're on with Dr. Andy Nawa.
Hi, thank you for taking my call. I'm 65-year-old female with AFib. Intermittently, my watch shows less than 2% of the time, or 2% or so. I've had the echocardiogram. My heart is strong. I have an ejection fraction of 65%. But my brother just recently had an ablation. He was in AFib almost 100% of the time. He's had multiple cardioversions, and it wouldn't hold. And my mother had AFib, and she passed from a stroke in her mid-80s. So I'm wondering, I was told I could do an ablation now, or I can wait. And I'm just wondering, is there any benefit to doing it now when AFib is not as bad and my heart is strong?
No, very good question. I think you can wait. 2% is... not a lot, you know what I mean? And to be honest, looks like you, like I sometimes tell my patients, almost like a AFib family, you know what I mean? Your mom, your brother, yourself. So with passage of time, your upper portions of your heart, which is the left side of the left atrium, which is the upper chambers of your heart on the left side, that's where the AFib is coming from. It's going to dilate. As you grow older, there will be more and more AFib. And potentially then you will need an ablation if you get into AFib more, most of the time, you know, or a lot of the times. Yeah. So I think 2% is still, not a lot of risk burden at the moment, you know. And I think you can hold for the time being.
Mary, thanks a lot for the call. Buddy of mine never smoked, in tremendous shape, it works out all the time, vegetarian, came down with AFib, and nobody can really figure out why. It doesn't really run in the family. There was some speculation that maybe it was COVID that caused it. I mean, is there any evidence that might lead to that?
So he doesn't have and you said he exercises.
Oh, he's a vegetarian, relentlessly.
And,
yeah.
And he's slim, like he doesn't have any sleep apnea or anything like that.
Nope.
Yeah, I mean, so the AFib, the idea is that this AFib is coming from the left, atrium, which is the upper chamber of the heart, and you have these pulmonary veins, these veins that drain the lungs that comes into the left side of the heart, and there could be, maybe he has some sort of a pulmonary vein malformation genetically, that his veins sits at a certain angle in the left atrium that has caused this electrical disruption. Usually AFib, AFib, in my opinion, happens to a lot, as we grow older, it's like, to me, it's like an old age arrhythmia. As we grow older, our heart ages. As our heart ages, our left atrium dilates. As our left atrium dilates, we get more AFib. So, and what are the risk factors of the AFib? It's similar to what the cardiac risk factors are. If you have an enlarged heart, if you have high blood pressure, if you have sleep apnea, if you're a big person, you'll have it. But then your friend has this and there's no family history of it or anything. But, sometimes you can't explain certain things, but maybe it has to do genetically with his pulmonary veins that are too close or at a certain angle that it's causing the electrical disruption.
Let's grab another call or two here before we wrap it up with Dr. Andy Nawab of Cardiology Associates of Schenectady. And we'll go to Ann in Albany. Ann, you're on.
Hello. I'm sorry, I'm in a wheelchair and I can't turn the radio off.
Okay, that's all right.
You can hear me.
Yep. Well, you can ask the question and then Zach will turn you down a little bit, but hang on the line. Go ahead.
All right. I hear about this beet supplement all the time, and I've always wondered about what the deal is. But my important question has to do with the fact that I developed AFib about 6 years ago after a round of sepsis, unexpected, but anyway, eventually they put me from Eliquis and got me on the Watchman. I just finished a 3-month round of Plavix.
Okay.
Now I'm on a baby aspirin, and I've got an internal heart monitor, and see, AFib is not real frequent, but it is every day a little bit.
All right.
I don't feel it, and I'm also on a statin. I'm 75, and I'm wondering if I can kind of rest easy now with the Watchman, because I did have a hemorrhagic stroke about 5 years ago.
All right, so we're going to turn you down, but stay on the line. Go ahead, doctor.
So the question is that she's 75 and she has had AFib and she had a hemorrhagic stroke and she used to be on a blood thinner but now have a Watchman. Can she rest easy because now she has a Watchman for prevention of stroke? I think so. Watchman is a good way. Watchman is a device where it's an occlusive device so basically, once again, the AFib is coming from the left atrium. There is an appendage attached to the left atrium where all this AFib is coming from. So basically, I explain to patients, Watchman is like a disc that just goes and occludes that area where that AFib is coming from. It's almost like, you have a pan and you just shut the lid. And that's what it is. And Watchman is a very good alternative way of coming off of blood thinners, off Eliquis, especially in someone like her who had increased risk of bleeding.
All right, doctor, we only have 1 minute here, so I will end with this question from Catherine in Gilboa, and it's really good.
Okay.
When in medical history did researchers start taking women's health seriously as having separate issues and needs than men? Also, does the fact that women tend to have a higher pain tolerance than men lead to more undiagnosed heart and health issues? Got about 30 seconds.
Yeah, excellent question. I truly think that now I think my male colleagues are more and more on board that females are different than males. I would say just 25 years ago when I joined the practice, there was a lot of people who think it was just, a lot of bull crap, basically.
Yeah. Thank you for not swearing.
So basically, I agree. It's just been in the last 25 to 30 years that we have really started taking this seriously. And I agree, women have higher pain thresholds because, you know, we get pregnant, we deliver babies.
No man going to go through that.
Exactly,
let me tell you something.
Exactly. And the fact that we are always busy. We are never really, we are just from childbirth designed to take care of others. You know, I feel that. And we are always focused on our families and children and siblings. And as a result, we don't really take care of ourselves as much. And so therefore, it is important that to recognize this as a separate entity so that, you know, I always think that a healthy woman, healthy mind, good family, better family.
Well, you know what? You are great. Hey, Dr. Nawab, thanks for being on the show. Maybe come back again?
Yeah, sure.
Support comes from Berkshire Plastic Surgeons in Great Barrington and Pittsfield, offering skin cancer screenings, Botox, injections, fillers, cosmetic and reconstructive surgery. BerkshirePlasticSurgeons.com. Well, once again, thanks to Dr. Andy Nawab of St. Peter's Health Partners for joining us today. Thank you for listening. Thanks for the great calls. Sorry if we didn't get to your question either via phone or email. A lot of them today. We'll do this topic again. Thanks to Zach Malloy, our engineer. Phone screened by Ed Rosen, who surprisingly is still on the phone. Show's over there, buddy. Time to wrap it up. Tomorrow on the program, Cars with Gordon Fricke. I'm Ray Graff. We'll see you tomorrow at 2:00.